Amsterdam. I got something on the burner, and it's gonna it needs to get out. Joyce, would you stand up? This is my beloved wife of 54 years, 3 months, and 15 days. And she's a Proverbs 31 lady. And she's helped me along the way. Ladies, your family and your husband's not going to go any further than you let him go. And you can be an encouragement or promoter. And you'll be blessed for doing that. My wife is an excellent seamstress. She's done sewing for Marlene Evans, Mrs. Wilkerson, Mrs. Hiles, Mrs. Lee Robertson, and several other ladies. In the last 28 years, she's worked on tour member outfits, and she's sold for 100 of ladies in the dorms. Okay. And I just want to make sure she got a little recognition. During some of our fall festivals years ago, she would make 500, 600, 700 egg rolls and sell them and use the money to put on City Baptist school bills, like Charvy Rath, and that's Miss Kimberly's mother, Kimberly Keel. And she's helped a lot of people in that way. My wife and I have traveled to Cambodia together, to Costa Rica, South Korea, Israel. We've been to China 6 times. And taught in some couple different English schools there for a period of time. We chaperoned 10 college students in 2007, and 4 of those students ended up being on the China mission team. We're going to go to 2 places. First, find Jeremiah chapter 35, and put a note there, a finger there, or something. And then turn to 2 Kings chapter 18. I want to start off by telling how I got hired here. And I think there'll be some instruction in this. When I came here, I was 34 years old, and somewhat older than almost everybody here when you start out. And I decided I was going to get everything I could while I was here. And I took 2 1-year degrees, a pastor's refresher diploma and a master's of education. I took 3 years to get 2 1-year degrees. I wanted to spend time with my family, and I wanted to study and learn the material well that was being presented. I had a heart for missions when I came here. Thought about going to Nigeria initially, and for a period of time, Nigeria was closed. Then I thought about being a missionary to Vietnamese and Cambodian refugees. We were working with those kind of people in the early 80s. I think both of your sisters work in our Sunday school department, Jana and Mary, and they were a blessing, and they're living for God now. I talked to Don Sisk about trying to reach Vietnamese and Cambodian refugees in Thailand, and he advised against doing that. I'm not going to keep moving and not go into details on so many things. So the last semester I was here, about this time of the semester, before this I had interviewed a couple of pastors about being a principal. And one day after chapel, I was walking down the hallway to, what's that place, Liberty Square. And Dr. Evans was down there. And he said, can I talk to you a minute? And he said, have I ever asked you to write down the classes from the catalog you thought you could teach here. That's something you'd remember. And I said, no. And he said, would you do that for me? And so I wrote down some lower level math classes, lower level science classes, and some freshman English classes. I did not write down Greek at all. And then I gave that to Dr. Evans' secretary, I think. And then a couple days later, Dr. Jorgensen contacted me and said, asked me to come to Dr. Evans' office on Tuesday morning at 10:30. And so I did, and they told me that Brother Fink, who had been teaching Greek, was decided to retire for some health reasons. And Dr. Jorgensen said, we notice on your transcript that you have in four courses of Greek, you have three A pluses and an A. So I think my idea of taking classes slow enough to learn the material well paid off big time. It's been a joy of my life to be here and be a teacher of Howells Anderson students. When they made that offer to me, I said, can I think about it overnight? And, as I walked home five blocks to Durban Terrace, I got all teared up just at the thought of teaching missionaries and pastoral students. And I called our home pastor, Dr. Ed Johnson, in Rosemount, Minnesota, and he said, well, I just have one question. Do you feel that God has called you to be a pastor? And I said, no. He said, it looks like a good opportunity. And so I felt like this is where God wanted me to be, and all these years I haven't felt like it's God's will for us to change and go anywhere else. So we've just been, I think what we're doing is important, and we don't want to come down from what we're doing. Investing in new students is a hope for America, hope for the world, and I'm just happy to be a part in doing that. Let's, 2 Kings chapter 10. We're just going to look at a couple verses and try to go through a few things quickly here. 2 Kings chapter 10, verse 15. And when he, it's talking about Jehu, departed thence, he lighted on Jonadab. As it says with Jehonadab, and then in Jeremiah 35, it's Jonadab. The son of Rechab coming to meet him, and he, Jehu, saluted him and said unto him, is thine heart right as my heart is with thine heart? And Jonadab answered, it is. And if it be, give me thine hand. And he gave him his hand, and he took him up into his chariot. And I like this next line. Verse 16, and he, talking about Jehu, said, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord. And they made him ride in his chariot. What a line. Come with me and see my zeal for the Lord. Jonadab had a friend who said, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord. What kind of friends do you have? Do you have friends that say, come and see my zeal for video games? Come and see my zeal for inappropriate entertainments? Come and see my zeal for inappropriate jokes? Come and see my zeal for inappropriate music? Come and see my zeal for the Lord. 2 Corinthians 3:2 says, you are our epistle written in our hearts and known and read of all men. Our lives talk. In fact, our lives talk louder than our talk talks. You've heard that somewhere before. Pastor Wilkerson's life says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord for soul winning, discipleship, and missions. Ray Young's life says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord for serving God and the man of God. John Francis' life says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord for building bus routes and helping City Baptist students. Mark Bushy's life says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord for missions and mission trips. Jeremy Snipes' life says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord for missions and passing out tracts. Jesse Dominguez, and Dr. Colling, Abdel Judah, Mike Fish, Mike Wolf, Brother Swarty, Brother Pfeiffer, and many others here live a life that says, come with me and see my zeal for the Lord They're training Howells Anderson students. And we have a zeal and a passion for what we're doing here, or we wouldn't stay doing here. Let's turn to Jeremiah chapter 35. Jeremiah 35. We're going to just read some of the verses and skip around. Okay, 2 Kings took place about 894 B.C., and our passage here is about 590 B.C. It's almost 300 years past in time. And okay, so that's an important part of the story here. Jeremiah 35, let's start with verse 2. Go unto the house of the Rechabites, and speak unto them, and bring them into the house of the Lord, into one of the chambers, and give them wine to drink. Now let's go down to verse 5. And I set before the sons of the house of the Rechabites pots of wine and cups, and I said unto them, drink ye wine. But they said, we will drink no wine, for Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, commanded us, saying, ye shall drink no wine, neither ye, nor your sons forever. Neither shall ye build house, nor sow seed, nor plant vineyard, nor have any, but all your days ye shall dwell in tents, that ye may live many days in the land where ye be strangers. Verse 8. Thus have we obeyed the voice of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, our father, in all that he hath charged us, to drink no wine all our days, we, our wives, our sons, nor our daughters. Verse 9, nor build houses for us to dwell in, and neither have we vineyard, nor field, nor seed, but we have dwelt in tents, and have obeyed, and done according to all that that Jonadab, our father, commanded us. Let's go down to verse 13. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, go and tell the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem, will ye not receive instruction to hearken to my words, saith the Lord. Verse 14. The words of Jonadab, the son of Rechab, that he commanded his sons not to drink wine, are performed. And unto this day they drank none, but they obey their father's commandment, notwithstanding I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but ye hearken not to me, unto me. And so God told Jeremiah to speak to the people of Judah and Jerusalem, and he gave these Rechabites as an example. They followed what their father commanded, or forefather commanded, almost 300 years before. But the people of Judah and Jerusalem are not listening to the prophets and what they have said. And so he gave this as a contrast, as an example. Let's go down to verse 18. And Jeremiah said unto the house of the Rechabites, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, because ye have obeyed the commandment of Jonadab your father, and kept all his precepts, and done according to all that he hath commanded you. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, Jonadab, the son of Rechab, shall not want a man to stand before me forever. Okay, Jonadab had a vision for his descendants, and he formulated a plan for his family to follow. The Rechabites were a nomadic tribe belonging to the Kenites of the family of Jethro, Moses' father-in-law. And Jeremiah tells that these Rechabites of they all obeyed all the commands of their forefather, Jonadab. Jonadab may have written these commands down in the last will and testament. He probably followed these commands, and he appointed the Rechabites to live in tents and not to build houses. Okay, by living in tents, they would have learned humility. They would have learned how to endure hardness. They would learn to live frugally. And it would have been easy for them to move to another place at the leading of God. I just want to give an illustration or two on enduring hardness. 2 Timothy 2:3 says, thou therefore endure hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Okay, Paul's talking to Timothy. When I was in engineering school at Iowa State University, I started in 65, and 1969 was home for Thanksgiving break. My mother called me one morning, and my dad had a stroke in the night, and he tried to get up and ended up on the floor. And so I was the one that got elected to ride with him in an ambulance 25 miles to Dubuque, Iowa. And my dad sold farm to farm for a farm service company, sold feed and fertilizer and iron shots, different things that farmers needed. And there was some hope that my dad would be able to drive again. I have three younger sisters and two younger brothers. And so I dropped out of engineering school and became the breadwinner for the family for the next 9 months. And then after that period, it was determined my dad wouldn't be able to drive again. And so and my parents were able to get some Social Security benefits. So it worked out for me to go back to Iowa State University. And I came here in 1981, and about the second semester I was here, we found out my mother had cancer. And she was very staunch Catholic. I tried to witness to her a few times, but she wouldn't listen. And then one Saturday morning, before she was supposed to have a cancer operation on Monday, I called her and got to witness to her over the telephone, and she prayed and asked Jesus to save her. And okay, so while that was the first year I was here, then the second year I was a student here, about 14 months later, my mother ended up dying from cancer. Okay, what do you do if you have a parent that dies while you're a student? Okay, Tom Williams, a month ago, talked about that in a sermon. He said, you just go on, you just go on, you just keep on going. And that's what you need to do. Okay, living frugally. I started working here for the college in 1984. We had three children, and we wanted my wife to be a stay-at-home mother and to train and teach our children. In the whole first year, we didn't find a house. Through the summer, we didn't find a house. And then school started the second year I was teaching. And one morning, I just said to God, if you want us to have a house, you're going to need to show me a house. And it was that day at lunch, or the next day, Brother Sally came up to me and asked if we had found a house, and I told him no, and he said, there's a house just around the corner from me that might be suitable for you. It needs a lot of work, but you might be able to get it for a good price. And we rented the house for 6 months and fixed it up, and we were able to get it for a loan payment of $258 a month. There were times that we needed cars, and we prayed for cars. One time, Charlie Vest at church asked me and my wife to stop by his house on Sunday afternoon, and I took our son John along, and he asked if we'd been praying for a car, and we said yes, and he said, I want to give you my wife's car. And then after that, when I would drive, sometimes I would ask John how we got that car. He said it was an answer to prayer. It's good for parents to have visual answers to prayer around the house. And it proves that you get your prayers answered, and it proves to the children that they have some prospect of getting prayers answered also. Another time we were praying for a car, and Mrs. Paulson gave us Dr. Paulson's car. Another time we were praying for a car, and all these situations, I didn't tell people that we were praying for a car. Another time, a family member sent us $10,000, and that helped us be able to buy a car. Some other times we've needed a car, and we saved up cash so we could not have to get a bank loan and car payments. I want to challenge you, instead of going into bank debt or credit card debt, before you do that sort of thing, why don't you pray and ask God? He might decide to show himself strong on your behalf if you're willing to trust enough to pray. The Rechabites followed Jonadab's commands, and I read a book a couple months ago, and it talked about don't plan for the next generation. One of the chapter titles, plan for 150 years. And if you're some of you students are dating, one topic of conversation you might have is what would we like our descendants to look like in 150 years? What kind of things would we like them to be doing? And what kind of a scenario could make something like that happen? Howes Anderson College is like a family. We've been going 51 years, and I think we could go another 100 years if we keep on doing the same things we're doing. There's a lot of colleges that are out of business now because they're not following along with what their founders started with. At Howes Anderson, we're focused on training soul-winning pastors, missionaries, teachers, and Christian workers. And we try to maintain personal holiness and promote personal soul-winning using the right Bible, King James Bible, and having modest dress and standards, and having God-honoring music. I want to talk about just a random little thing here on dating standards. Okay, we're going to have a linguistics lesson. And if you have a Kleenex, or the ladies may have one, or you could just do this little experiment with your hand. Okay, you can hold up a Kleenex, and there are three letters that are aspirated when they're at the beginning of the word, a T, P, and a K. And if you just pronounce the word pink, you can get a little movement in the Kleenex, or if you pronounce pink or tin, you can feel a little puff of air on your hand. Okay, the practical application. If you're on a date and your date says a word that starts with a aspirated T, P, or K, and you can feel the puff of air, you're sitting too close. Okay. Luke chapter 19 says, "For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost." One of the main focuses in our history has been personal soul winning. I don't have very much time. I'm going to give you some quick illustrations, and almost all of these had a tract involved. What kind of people pass out tracts? People have them. Okay, this used to be a Calvinist shirt. Okay, there used to be no pocket up here, but I had my wife cut out part of the shirt tail and make a pocket, and then she sewed some denim here. Okay. So now it's a converted shirt. It's no longer a Calvinist shirt. It's a soul winner shirt. Nathan Hepworth and I one time visited 1950 West Harrison Street, and we made a call where we some new Chinese people, and talked to them about coming to church, and they said they could come to church. And I asked him how many people could come, and the guy I talked to said he'd have to check that night. And I said, I'll call you tonight at 9:30. And he said, we don't have cell phones yet. And the Holy Spirit immediately led me. I hope that's not mine. I took out my cell phone, it was a flip phone, and I gave it to him, and he looked at it, and he said, you trust me? I said, I don't think you can call China with it, just give it back to me tomorrow. And so I called him, and we ended up having 29 first-time visitors come from that visit. Then 2 weeks later, I went to a grocery store to pick up some oyster sauce for my wife and talked to some guys that were buying groceries, and 22 of them came the next day. One time I was in my office and I got a telephone call, and the guy said, somebody gave me this paper and had this telephone number on it. So I got to lead him to the Lord over the telephone. It turned out there was a guy in our Chinese chapel, went by the White Sox baseball park, the red line there, and passed out some tracts. And that guy called me, and I got to lead him to the Lord. And he came to church 2 weeks later and got baptized. One time, my wife and I were in Incheon Airport in Korea. We had a four-hour layover, and gave some tracts to three Filipino guys that were coming on their way back from the Philippines, or from Nigeria to the Philippines, and we just happened to cross paths in the airport. We led them to the Lord. Then the next person I talked to, I gave a tract to a Vietnamese guy, and when he took it, he got a big grin on his face. He said, you showed me this 10 years ago in Chicago. I'm glad I talked to him the first time, and I'm glad I went soul winning the second time. One time I went to the Purdue dormitory and gave a tract to a girl, Doris, and because of the contact there, my wife and I took 10 people to China to teach at an English school, and four of those people end up joining the China mission team. If I wouldn't have given this gal a tract the first time, that wouldn't have happened. I've led people to the Lord from Africa on the Great Wall of China. They came from Angola. We came from the United States, 7,000 miles, and I got to lead them to the Lord. I led two people to the Lord in Magdala when we were on a trip to Israel, maybe just down the street from where Mary Magdalene got saved. One time I was in Bursa with Brother Bachman. There were five of us in a very crowded place. And I saw a Chinese lady. I'm looking for my Chinese tract. I gave this Chinese lady a tract. I said, this tells how to be 100% sure to go to heaven. And she said, what must I do? we were going single file, and I was the last person in the group, and I didn't know how far Brother Bachman was going, where he's going to stop, or even if he's going to come back this direction. So I figured I didn't dare stop and talk to her, but I think maybe I'll meet her in heaven someday. I've got probably another 8 or 10 illustrations concerning tracts. If you don't carry tracts, you're missing out on opportunities that you could have. And you're missing out on opportunities to see people saved, and opportunities to have stories, opportunities to have blessings. Let's pray. If we're going to keep Hiles Anderson College strong for another 100 years, we'll have to keep a strong soul-winning emphasis. And maybe one person or more today might decide that I'm going to give out tracts more frequently. I'm going to, maybe somebody with purpose to carry tracts every day. I have my tracts by my nightstand when I get up, and before I leave my bedroom in the morning, I put them in my shirt.